Welcome to Leaders of Code. This is a segment of the Stack Overflow podcast. On this show, we chat with leaders in business and engineering about the work they're doing, their challenges, their customers, how they grow about building the best teams possible, how they're leveraging AI, and much more. My name is Ira May, and I'm the B2B editor at Stack Overflow, and I will be your host today. I am here chatting with Jody Bailey, who is the Chief Product and Technology Officer at Stack, and also with Dane Connect, who is newly appointed Cloudflare CTO. Thank you both for making the time to come with us today. I wanted to just start off by asking, Dane, you moved into this role as CTO of Cloudflare pretty recently after a long tenure at the company and other roles. So I just wanted to ask you about what that transition has been like.
Yeah, no, I've been at Cloudflare for a little over 14 years, kind of joined early on as a first product person when we were less than 30 people. And actually, John Graham Cumming joined just slightly before that as he had the title of programmer, which later became a CTO. But you know, we were working hand in hand from the beginning, both building out all the early products together, building out the engineering teams, kind of growing with the company. And so, you know, a lot of it is just things that I've been doing with the partner for a long time, and now get to spend even more time with our customers, as well as help across the company with some broader technology standards.
I'm curious, Dane, are you still responsible for product or are you solely focused on the technology side now?
Yeah, so Cloudflare, we have an interesting structure. At least for the last 8 years, we had multiple product engineering orgs. So we have a core product engineering org, which is today run by CJ Desai, and it's where most of our products that generate most of our revenue come from. It's and he's responsible for making sure kind of what we call innovation at scale. I've been running what we call our emerging tech incubation, which also was product engineering teams, about 15% of R&D. And our job was to really grow TAM, figure out how to build new products on top of our network that brought more value to our customers for every bit that flowed through us, and kind of got to break the rules a little bit and kind of act like a small startup within a bigger org. I still have that org today, so I still have those product engineering teams. Then I also inherited kind of the research team from John, which is kind of the third horizon. So if you kind of think of the first one is where the majority of the revenue comes from. The second one is where you know, the new products are kind of incubated. And then the research team, which is even, you know, kind of a farther time horizon, trying to figure out what new internet standards are coming, what new technology shifts are coming that we need to think about several years out.
That's super interesting. I'm curious how you evolved to that organizational structure, because it's a little bit different than others I've seen.
Yeah, Matthew, our CEO, was a student of Clay Christensen at HBS, Innovator's Dilemma, and wanted to make sure that we were always, you know, if anybody was going to disrupt us, it was going to be ourselves, and make sure that we had a team that didn't have the pressures of revenue each quarter, so they could really build what we thought were the right things to grow the company for the long term. And so he wanted that as a completely separate org that all reported up to through him. And didn't have to make those trade-offs that you always want to make when, you know, that deal comes in at the last minute and you want to make a few more customer commits.
Makes sense. I love that way of thinking. At Stack, we're going through a bit of, I won't say it's innovator's dilemma, right? But AI has obviously been a disruptor, you know, in the core way that we've operated in the past in terms of question and answers and people come in. And it's created new opportunities for us, but it's one of those things that I think for most of us, you know, while we all know AI has been out there for decades, right? I mean, it's not like an overnight success, so to speak, but it kind of was, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And in fact, Cloudflare has helped us a lot as we've looked at new ways of monetizing our business. You know, we've essentially got three different avenues, you know, a SaaS product, advertising, and then most recently, we launched a knowledge solutions product. So basically, that's creating, offering access to our content for large language models, for agents, things like that. And one of the things that Cloudflare helped us with was preventing all the scraping, you know, that was happening and people taking advantage of the content without going through the appropriate licensing processes.
And that's something that actually we're spending quite a bit of time on is, you know, Cloudflare's mission is to build a better internet. And part of a build a better internet also means that we need to have a free and open internet where great content is created. We want to make sure that, you know, as this kind of transition is happening, that content creators get to reap some of the reward, because without them, the open internet dies.
Right.
And so we've actually spent a lot of time with small and large media companies trying to think through that. You know, is there a different way to monetize the content? Is there a way to find an economic solution that works between the large language models and the publishers? Obviously, a lot of some of the larger publishers have cut deals with large language models, but there's a huge long tail of amazing content out there. And how should they be compensated? We are spending a lot of time working through that and trying to put together some interesting things that you'll be seeing from us over the summer.
Excellent. Yeah, I know Alora from my team spends, you know, quite a bit of time talking with folks at Cloudflare, looking at ways that we can continue to evolve. I'm curious, I'm sure you've adopted AI internally in terms of building out new features and such. And I'm curious if there's anything in particular that you're especially excited about or proud of or think is pretty cool.
Yeah, most recently we did a demo day with Anthropic on with MCP servers. You know, I've just been hugely fascinated with the MCP, the concept model context protocol, ability for your LLMs and your clients to be able to connect, you know, essentially over a programmatic interface to different resources internally and control them and have the LLM actually do more than just, you know, summarize something, but actually take actions and kind of really be your assistant. And we just saw some phenomenal demos built on top of us with MCP. And you know, I think that's really just kind of beginning of where you kind of goes from AI being this tool that everyone kind of sees the possibility, but really, you know, are we actually gaining the productivity gains and actually is it really changing your life? Which I think was a lot of, you know, kind of the last couple of years. So I think over the next year, I really think that the way I do my job is going to change in a much more dramatic way.
Totally agree. I mean, the easiest thing, you know, that's changed is just my writing has improved a lot, right? And it's gotten a lot faster. But we're also looking at MCP, right? In terms of, you know, making it easier for LLMs to integrate with content. You know, so our SaaS product, you know, it's a Stack Overflow for teams, you know, so that you can have all your proprietary information. And while we partnered with LLMs and provided access to the core content, and they do a great job with that, when it comes to the proprietary information, how do you incorporate that information? So MCP protocol is one of the things we're looking at for that product, but also on the public platform, because you see companies like Moveworks and others building agents that are helping people code. And then, you know, making it easier to interface with our data, you know, is kind of the flip side of that enabling the LLM. So I'm curious, you know, how the MCP standard has stood up for you so far. Has it met the needs or, you know, I know it's new, so.
We love how open Anthropic's been to working with us on evolving the standard. Obviously, it was originally built for something that you kind of run on your desktop and, you know, no authentication and no concept of remote. They were quick to take our feedback and work with us on evolving the standard to have both the remote MCP servers as well as adding authentication on top of that. And I think the standard is still very early, and you know, I think we'll continue to see it evolve quite a bit. But you know, for content, like the whole idea that people are scraping a website that's meant for a human and trying to, you know, decipher it is kind of wasteful. So you know, the idea that there is an MCP server that has access to the content, that has some contextual knowledge of how your content's structured and how the data and even what the data has been used for in the past, and to be able to give even back better information, I think is a much better way than just kind of scraping the websites.
Yeah, one of the things, and I don't know that it applies as directly to websites, but one of the things that we're looking forward to is the ability to push data back, right? So, you know, if you're interacting with an LLM and content, writing code, as it were, you know, maybe you have a discovery that you want to share with other folks, you know, that's more or less what our platform is about. Uh-huh. You know, being able to push that content back in a kind of a standard way, I think is going to be super valuable for folks.
I mean, it almost gives a new interface to Stack Overflow.
Exactly. So one of the things that we're seeing in the market are, you know, all these really small startups that are, you know, creating code editors or code writing agents, et cetera, and lots of small companies that are having really fast success, you know, with AI and such. And I think it's forcing people to think about, you know, how they operate internally. I don't know how old Cloudflare is. I mean, you've been there, you said 14 years? Yeah. So, I mean, it's at least 14 years old, right? And Stack is like 16. So both of our companies have been around for a while. And I'm curious, with AI, you know, with the different tooling, whether it's, you know, Windsurf or Copilot or Replit or whatever, how has that changed the way your team is thinking about or actually building code? Or, and, you know, how have you played a role in kind of advancing or controlling it?
Yeah, there's kind of three ways I think about how Confrey thinks about AI. One is, what tools can we bring to make our employees more productive? The second one being, how can we add AI and LLMs into just the product itself, into the configuration, and showing customers the value of our products? And then Workers AI, you know, giving people kind of the tools to AI enable their applications, the development platform for that. On the productivity side, for one, our roots are as a security company. We are, you know, very conscious about making sure that all of our customer information, our data, our code is very secure, and which has led us to being a little slow on the early to adopt tools until we had a good understanding of where our data was going and how it was being secured and making sure that it was never going to be trained on. And so we kind of sat over the past most of the year watching other companies do that and having small experiments. And then, you know, in the past 6 months, we kind of decided, okay, now is the time to really become an AI-first company. And, you know, that goes everything from how does sales and BDR operate down to how do developers code, to how do PMs build specs and docs, and figuring out which are the tools that you just want a good hammer, one of the large language models and their primary interfaces, which ones you want to go build your own tools and hopefully build them on Cloudflare. Cloudflare is our own best customer for our Workers platform. I think we're not getting to the place where we've been rolling those pilots out and you know, really seeing that it's not just the productivity goes up, the quality goes up too in a lot of cases. Everybody gets an editor and an intern in one, right? Someone that can give kind of instant feedback, kind of even challenge them, as well as get them doing work in parallel while you're focused on another task. One of the things I love the most is we've been using Claude Code, a lot of the developers, and Claude Code, it's a command line. It's not like a GUI IDE. You actually kind of just talk to it as you're building the code. And one thing we ask the developers to do is we ask them to keep the transcript and save the transcript into the PR. And it's so cool to be able to just kind of open up a PR and actually to see how the developer was thinking and how they were problem solving. Especially for some of our younger engineers to be able to go in there and just you know, not just see the PR and see how it was solved, but actually see the intermediate steps that led the engineer down to that solution. I almost think that, you know, on an interview, if you do coding exercises, you almost say AI is required, and say, because everyone's going to have to be using these tools, and it's right. Can you think in a way that is you know, kind of show your work is almost the answer there.
Well, it's funny you mentioned the interview, because that's exactly where my head went to, right? It's like, how many times, you know, have you sat down in an interview and asked somebody to walk you through how they would solve a problem?
Yeah.
And it's kind of the transcript to the interview that's actually being used to build the code, which is super cool, right?
Yeah.
Which also, you know, kind of goes to that, how do you help people? Like if you don't have experience writing code, if you don't have experience putting all the pieces together in order to think through that process, it was kind of I'm sure you've heard this question too. It's like, if AI becomes the junior developer, you know, how does somebody go from not a developer to a senior developer? Like, how do you cross that gap in order to guide the AI?
Yeah. And actually the way we've rolled out the pilot so far is only the most senior developers on some of our hardest code bases were given the tools first. We really want to understand what their productivity would look like. And actually, I find that actually it makes the best developers just, you know, really even better. It doesn't take a mediocre developer and make them great. It doesn't take someone that doesn't sweat the details and all of a sudden make them sweat the details. Those things come through with the code. And we actually have a rule that there actually is no vibe coding allowed at Cloudflare, because we expect everyone to basically attest when they check in the code that yes, AI might have written it or assisted, but I'm owning the code that I'm checking in. I fully understand it and taking kind of responsibility for it.
What does vibe coding mean to you? Right? Like, because on one hand you say no vibe coding, but on the other hand, I'm thinking, well, isn't vibe coding just, you know, prompting it and getting the code and everything? But it sounds like maybe vibe coding is doing that, but not understanding it.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, at least maybe that's just my definition of it, is basically more of just telling AI, oh, build this for me, and then you can deploy it and ship and start using it without actually digging into the details and being part of the process more.
I like that. I mean, frankly, I just feel uncomfortable saying vibe coding in general. So having it be more engineered, you know, sounds better to me too. So the other thing I'm seeing, and something I'm puzzling through myself, right, in terms of like becoming AI first, I've seen a lot of announcements lately, you know, whether it's Box or Duolingo or I think Zapier or whatever, where CEOs are coming out and basically saying, hey, you're not going to hire any people unless you've tried it with AI first, or some version of that. Did you all have any sort of internal declaration of you must do this, or, you know, try that, or has it been more organic and just kind of encouraging and such?
So Cloudflare, culturally from day one, we always run hot. So we always kind of run very close to capacity. And so I think anyone here, if you put a tool in front of them that you say that you're going to get more capacity, everyone here wants to take advantage of it. You can't hire your way out of the problems. You really have to engineer your way out of the problems. It's kind of just historically been the culture at Cloudflare.
Yeah.
You know, using AI is just another way of engineering your way out of the problem. And so, you know, a lot of it is still kind of responsibility of the teams and the managers to make sure that they're kind of optimizing their teams and helping, you know, Cloudflare's overall mission of building better internet.
Makes sense. What are you most excited about? Like anything going forward that you're super excited?
Well, I mean, we've been working on the Workers developer platform for almost 8 years now. And Matthew early on said that a platform takes about 10 years to really develop and kind of hit its stride. And so we're closing in on that point. And the Cloudflare Workers platform is very opportunity-oriented. You know, if you build the way that is designed for Cloudflare Workers, you instantly get this application that can be deployed anywhere, is horizontally scalable, has data localization, all these kind of, not maybe day one requirements, but kind of day two requirements for an application. But it's not easy to port a legacy application over to us. And so, you know, we've always been great for greenfield applications. And what's really exciting for me is we're kind of hitting the point where the platform has matured, and we're hitting this kind of natural inflection point in the world where I think there's going to be more new code written, you know, in the next couple of years than there was the past 10 years, which means there's an opportunity for all these new greenfield applications to be written on Cloudflare and really have people kind of focusing on the business value of their applications and not having to worry about what infrastructure they're running on or how they're going to scale it, and being able to deploy something that both kind of meets the needs day one as well as the needs of a Fortune 100 fully scaled application.
I'm a little embarrassed to say I'm not very familiar with the Workers platform. Can you maybe just describe it a little bit more?
Yeah, I mean, so initially we released it. It was a kind of a serverless JavaScript functions platform where, you know, all these requests go through our platform, and we wanted to make it programmable, both for our customers as well as just make it easier for us internally to develop applications. And then over the past 8 years, we've continued to add more compute and data primitives to that to make it easier to build full stack applications, from rolling out R2, which is an S3 compatible blob storage, to D1 and DO, two different database primitives, to all of our real time turn WebRTC components. And then most recently, and then obviously adding GPU storage and being able to do inference at our edge. And then most recently, are announcing containers, which will expand the type of compute that you can deploy to us as well.
That's awesome. Going back to the adoption of AI or even AI in general, have there been any disruptions for you, like anything that you've had to figure out how to work around or adapt to?
Kind of going back to kind of Cloudflare's original core products, where we are infrastructure protection and provide security performance that's sitting in front of web servers, you know, all your internet endpoints. A lot of the inference companies had this kind of asymmetric problem where the cost of the inference was so high that it led to a lot of people wanting to find ways around from a fraud basis. The expansion of how people are trying to attack and get around those defense security protections has evolved quite a bit because of that. And so we've had to really change our tactics and ways that we protect those sites.
I imagine that that's a constant battle, right? As you protect more things, the attacks get more clever, more sophisticated. It seems like AI makes all those things a little easier to create, which has to have a downstream impact on y'all too. For us, you know, AI, I think I alluded to, you know, while it created opportunities from a business perspective, you know, it also introduced risk in terms of traffic to the site. You know, people can get those easy answers through the different coding tools, et cetera. You know, I would say we're in a bit of a transition period ourselves as we kind of evolve from this canonical Q&A to expanding to a more true community with different ways of interacting and communicating with folks. So it's been interesting for me. Like you started on the product side, it sounds like. Maybe you were an engineer before you were product. I've just recently taken on the product organization here. You know, so I've kind of gone the other way a little bit. And it's an interesting and fun experience to go from, you know, just being responsible for building and delivering things to being accountable for what you're building and delivering. So that's been interesting for me. You know, I'm curious, you know, for you, like, what is the most rewarding part of your role?
When I hear from customers how we've helped them, whether it's protect them from attacks, let them scale their business with just a few people because of the tools we provide, you know, to doing things that really changed the shape of the internet, like when we doubled the encrypted internet overnight, when we announced universal SSL, or we rolled out IPv6 for everyone and doubled the amount of IPv6 on the internet. I think we have an opportunity to both kind of shape the internet and the technologies, and as well as make sure that everyone has access to build and share their content with the world. You know, it's been pretty special.
Thank you for listening to Leaders of Code. If you have any questions or feedback, suggestions for folks you'd like to hear from or topics you'd like this show to cover, you can email me at emay@stackoverflow.com, or you can always find me on LinkedIn as Ira May. So I wanted to thank Jody Bailey. He's our Chief Product and Technology Officer at Stack Overflow. Thank you so much for joining. Can you let folks know where they can find you online?
Oh, sure. I'm not super active online. I'd say LinkedIn is probably the best place to find me. It's Jody Bailey. Find me there, or of course at Stack Overflow.
Awesome. And we've also spoken today with Dane Kinect. He's the newly appointed CTO at Cloudflare. Dane, if people want to learn more about what you've been working on or connect with you, where can they do that?
Yeah, on LinkedIn as well at dkinect on LinkedIn, or Twitter, DOK2001. And of course, learn more about the developer platform at cloudflare.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We'll see you guys on the next episode of Leaders of Code.